The bell ceased. "Now," said Beltrame, casting his hat upon the grass and untrussing the points of his doublet with swift, eager fingers. Angelo started as from a reverie and proceeded more leisurely to make ready. A moment he stood, holding the rose to his lips, breathing the fragrance of it. He was loath to put it down, yet he needed both his hands, one for his sword, the other for his dagger. For Beltrame awaited him doubly armed. At last he solved the difficulty and set the stem of the flower between his teeth. If God willed that he should die that evening, at least her first love token should be with him in his last moments. Its perfume, fond emblem of her soul, should sweeten for him his last breath on earth. Beltrame saw him coming, the rose between his lips, and lacking the wit to sound a poet's fancies, he deemed it an act of mockery, a thing done derisive and exultantly. He paled a shade. He looked furtively around. They were alone. A deadly smile flickered on his lips as he raised his weapons and fell on guard. He was a gentleman trained in arms, was this Beltrame, and easy, he thought, should be to him the slaughter of a scribbling poet, a man versed in no weapon but the goose quill. Yet his certainty of victory was based on an even surer measure of precaution. His valour sprang from another advantage, an advantage that made him no better than a murderer, as you shall learn. Sword and dagger met dagger and sword, parted, met again, circled, flashed, struck fire, were locked an instant, and once more were parted. For some 5 minutes they fought on. The sweat gathered on Beltrame's brow, and he breathed a prayer of thanks to a heaven that surely did not heed him for the secret advantage that was his. Without that, it would almost seem that this scrivener must prove his better. They fell back to breathe a moment, each welcoming the brief respite, for each was winded by the fierce vigor of the onslaught. Then they engaged once more, and Angelo knew in his heart that he was Beltrame's master. But that he held his hand, Angelo might have slain his adversary a score of times had the latter had a score of lives to lose. But he was gentle as he was skilled, and he could not seek the life of the man who had been his friend. Instead, he sought Beltrame's sword arm. If he could drive a foot or so of steel through it, there would be an end to the encounter, and by the time the wound was healed, he would see to it that their difference was healed also. He would reason with this hot-headed Beltrame during the season of his convalescence and seek to induce him out of his murderous jealousy. Suddenly Beltrame's point came like a snake at Angelo's throat. Angelo was no more than in time to turn the thrust aside, and the viciousness that could aim so at a vital spot stirred his anger anew. It also awoke him to a sense of his own danger. Unless he disabled Beltrame soon, his life would pay the price of his generosity. Beltrame was the stronger and was showing less fatigue. Unless he went in soon, he might not go in at all. Since he could not reach the arm, he would take Beltrame there, high up in the right breast, above the lung, where little damage could be done. Thus, he parried a sharp thrust, delivered rather high, and on the binding of the blade went in and up with a stroke that he had learned from the famous Costanzo of Milan, who had been his precipitor in the art of swordsmanship. His point went home unwarded. But instead of sinking through unresisting flesh, it struck something that jarred and numbed his arm, and on the stroke his rapier snapped, and he was left with a hilt and a stump of steel. Beltrame laughed, and Angelo understood. The Neapolitan wore a shirt of mail, one of those meshes so much in fashion then, so fine that your two hands might encompass and conceal it, and yet so finely tempered as to be proof against the stoutest stroke of sword or dagger. The poet twisted the rose to a corner of his mouth that he might have freedom to speak. What time with his dagger and the stump that remained him, he made the best defense he could against the other's furious charge.
"Coward!"
he cried in a fury of reproach.
"Oh, craven hound! Assassin! Ah! Jesu!
Beltrame's sword had found him. A second he stood shuddering, his lips twisted, his eyes surprised. Then he hurtled forward and lay prone on the turf, horribly still, his teeth clenched fast over the stem of his red rose. Beltrame stood over him, sword imbrued to the hilt, a mocking, cruel smile on his swarthy face.